Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport. My name is David Law from BBC Radio 5 Live, sitting in the radio room, which is where we bring our reports worldwide all the way around the globe on BBC Radio 5 Live and BBC World Service. I'm sitting next to Catherine Whittaker, who's part of the Eurosport team. They've been wall-to-wall with their coverage today, and there's been so much to talk about, hasn't there, Catherine? Because, you know, results galore, shocks galore, and heat stories galore. Because, I mean, we're sitting now in this nice air-conditioned radio room, keeping our voices down because our colleagues are all around. But the fact is, the weather outside is pretty unpleasant to walk out into. And I'm sure if you're in the snow right now, you're thinking, David Law, can you just shut up? But describe it.
But, yeah, I mean, I know people sitting back home or wherever they are in what I'm hearing described as an Arctic bomb probably don't want to hear the first world problems of tennis journalists talking about how hot it is at the Australian Open in Melbourne. But there's heat and there's what it is today. And what it is today is it's an inferno. I mean, there's something so menacing about it, and even in the shade, it's extraordinary. 140 degrees Fahrenheit apparently reached on the show courts today. That's around about 60 degrees centigrade.
60?
Around about 60 degrees, yeah. In the show courts, you know, in the well of the show courts where there's absolutely no breeze. I've never experienced anything like it. I know it's scheduled to be hotter tomorrow, and I physically cannot imagine that. I can't.
No.
Especially as I received an email overnight from the production manager handling the Winter Olympics for Eurosport, which is the gig I'm going on to. I'm at the very start of a mammoth 7.5 week Australian Open and Pyeongchang Winter Olympics trip at the moment.
She calls this work.
And I had a email overnight explaining that there's an extreme weather warning in place in South Korea. They are experiencing lows of minus 25 currently.
So you're going to go have like
that
a
is
sick...
an 85 degree centigrade difference in temperature.
Right.
Yeah. I won't bore you with my travails of packing for this trip, but
no.
It's been challenging. Anyway.
Yes, I did once do, my first year I did the Australian Open, I went from 37 degrees to minus 17.
Was that just Solihull?
No, that was Zagreb, actually, in Croatia.
Right, okay.
Solihull just sort of, you know, just nice and temperate around the sort of, you know,
it's more
eight,
drizzly
eight
than
degrees
Arctic
Celsius,
Solihull.
Yes.
Anyway, you asked me to describe it, and I did my best there, but it's pretty impossible. I think better than describing it is just to look at a screenshot of the faces of either Novak Djokovic or Gael Monfils during the match that they played in. I'm sure this tournament has thrown up conditions like that, but it's as bad as I can remember. The most extraordinary thing about it for me this time yesterday, or a little bit later on yesterday, we were recording. What time is it, David? Around about 8:30, 8:45 local time. So Ash Barty just in a tussle with Camilla Giorgi on Rod Laver Arena with Roger Federer to follow. This time yesterday, we were talking about how seemingly controversial and potentially ridiculous it was that Roger Federer yet again was playing night session and poor old Djokovic was shunted into the day session in the worst of the heat. Well, it was broken by Chris Fowler of ESPN earlier today, subsequent to a chat, we think, that he had with the Djokovic team, that Novak Djokovic requested to play day session yesterday, which at the time that news broke, I found utterly extraordinary. Well, he certainly knew something we didn't know. And we learnt a lot about Djokovic and about Monfils today. A lot of the French people I've spoken to were pretty scathing about Monfils today and the way he wilted so drastically after a set, and more so the way he showed how much he was wilting, because I think majority opinion is that Djokovic was suffering to similar levels. I mean, any human being would have been out there. It wasn't even about fitness, really. It was almost about mental strength, but he bluffed it. Yeah. He found a way to bluff it.
And that's what Monfils they have to do, isn't it?
Whatever the opposite of bluffing it is, I mean, Monfils was, you know, was playing it up almost. He couldn't have been giving more of an upper hand to his opponent. I know it's tough. You know, I was not bluffing my way through 10 minutes of broadcasting in this heat earlier. I was letting everyone around me know how sweaty and uncomfortable I was. But, you know, these guys, they can't afford to do that. No, they can't afford to let on in the way that Monfils did today.
We had Dominic Inglots, the doubles player, in with us on commentary, and I asked him, you know, can you afford to feel sorry for your opponent if they're clearly suffering, like Gael Monfils was today? Can you afford to think, you know, I hope he's all right? And Inglots said, no, you can't. He said, if he's suffering, I'm thinking, right, I'm really going for it now. I'm going to try and put the hammer down.
Especially not if you're suffering just as badly, which, I mean, if you, that 8-minute game that Djokovic played in the fourth set, trying to serve it out when Monfils had break-back points and it seemed like the game would never end, and it came to the point where Djokovic had a few match points that had come and gone, and he just took this long sigh and gazed upwards, and it was just, you realised then what an absolute ordeal it had been for him, and it was the look of a man that just couldn't bear for it to go on for a second longer, and you saw the same in the embrace they had at the net afterwards. They both realised that they'd experienced something that most athletes don't, and they'd sort of made it through it together. I think he was suffering just as much. It's just it wasn't as demonstratively as it was for Monfils.
And we were having a conversation in the first set of that match, weren't we? Obviously, at that point, Monfils had won the first set. We were wondering, you know, if this is the case that Chris Fowler has got this right, that Djokovic just wanted to play in the afternoon. I mean, what is he doing? You know, that. How? Why would you want to do that? But actually, if that is the case, I mean, it bore itself out.
And it shows, I mean, that really tells us something about Djokovic, that he was willing to put himself through that because he backed himself to have the edge, willing to put himself through what could potentially damage him for the rest of the tournament, maybe. I mean, who knows? I'm sure these guys are amazing at the recovery process. We've seen him recover from worse, certainly longer matches than that one before. But the fact that he was willing to actively volunteer to put himself through something like that because he believed he would be able to show that he was the stronger person physically and mentally. It's a real statement. And, you know, I've heard a lot of question marks raised over Monfils. We were exchanging texts and I thought, but I don't think of Monfils as somebody that's weak physically. But actually, I've heard a lot of people say that he relies too much on his natural fitness. He is an extraordinary natural athlete and that shows in every inch of what he does. But first and foremost, he didn't play a smart game today because he used it all up. He used everything he had in that opening set. He was playing 15 shot rallies and he was winning them, but it was, he must have known that he wouldn't have been able to do that for four or five sets. Why didn't he? He's so reluctant to play any kind of aggressive game, despite the fact that he has the shots to do so. You know, when you see him standing 4 metres behind the baseline to return serve on a day like today, you can see him gearing up for a 15-shot rally, and you just think, where's the self-preservation in there?
Yeah. I also, the other thing is, and we're only talking degrees here, because he's obviously not only a phenomenal athlete, he's got great willpower as well. You don't get to where he is in the world and do what he's done without having it. But relatively speaking, he does not want it as much as Novak Djokovic. He would not be prepared to put himself through as much as those top few players.
I'm not sure many would be. I mean, no. I bet you Roger Federer wasn't asking for a day session match today.
Well, no, I'm sure he wasn't.
Not that, I mean, it's obviously a different situation. He doesn't perhaps feel he needs that added edge over Jan Anderstroof, but I don't think there's many that would have requested to play day session today, no matter what the circumstances.
The other tactical thing that I mentioned to you is if you put Monfils out there in the bright lights when it's comfortable, he's more dangerous, isn't he? So, or at least that's how I would view it. So I can understand that Djokovic wouldn't want that Gael Monfils bouncing around, you know, wowing a nighttime primetime crowd.
Yeah, same for Joe Wilfried Tsonga, who will be playing primetime tomorrow against Nick Kyrgios on Rod Laver Arena. It's happening.
I know, can't wait for that. That means that Rafa Nadal's on the Margaret Court Arena. Actually, I heard somebody say that maybe the reason that that's the case is that maybe Nadal has said, well, I'd rather play over there in not the heat of the day than Rod Laver Arena in the afternoon.
I spoke to Carlos Moya earlier, and I believe that is what's happened. And Rafa actually practiced indoors today to shield himself from the heat. That's how brutal it was. Rafael Nadal didn't fancy it.
Wow. if he's not really enjoying it, then you know something's up. What do you think, Catherine? I mean, I've asked on social media, does something need to change here? We've done a pole vault. Do they need to bring in this heat rule earlier and have the roof closed and delay play until it cools down?
There seems to be some confusion because there are some camps, and I heard a BBC interview that was done with the tournament doctor here back in 2014 that was being quoted a lot on Twitter today, in which the tournament doctor said conditions like this, they might be uncomfortable and unpleasant, but there is no medical reason not to allow athletes to play in this. And then he went on to cite evidence about evolution-based argument about how cavemen used to spend hours in 40 degrees hunting for antelope. So we're kind of built for that. So that's the argument. That seemingly seems an argument against having a heat rule at all. You know, like it or lump it, it's the luck of the draw. You play in the conditions that you happen to get on the day. The other argument is, yes, you know, There is a line, there is a point at which it is cruel, inhumane to make athletes go out there and play in the heat. But the fact that we have a rule, but it wasn't employed today, makes a mockery of there being a rule, surely, because there's this bizarre algorithm where it's not just about heat, it's also about a wet bulb temperature. It's an algorithm that combines heat and humidity to create sort of this weird magical set of conditions in which the heat rule is invoked. And the fact that those conditions weren't triggered today makes a mockery of that rule.
Someone
has to spontaneously combust for the rule to be invoked. That seems to be the situation.
Well, anyway, 81% of you think that the rule needs to be brought in sooner, and Catherine Whittaker's not dissing the pole vault. So
Did you do a separate poll about whether there should be a rule? I think there's sort of two issues at play here. There are some people that think this is the ultimate physical contest. You know, this really... Well, I mean, this is 2 days in a row I've used the phrase men from the boys, even though I hate that expression so much.
Proposing a poll vault.
Well, I'm just saying there are two separate issues. There are two separate debate points at play here.
I see.
That's the only distinction I'm making. If you're going to do a poll vault, do it thoroughly.
I'm getting reprimanded on pole vaults now.
Yes.
Anyway, 81% think the rule needs to be brought in sooner. 19% think keep it as it is.
But I did say that these conditions would throw up some weird results. And
tomorrow's going to be hotter.
And tomorrow's... I mean, I cannot countenance that at the moment, David.
We've got a 12-hour date in the fridge first that we're planning. We're just going to sort of sit in there.
I mean, it's thinking the unthinkable. But we've had some weird results, haven't we?
Yeah, well, and... I don't know, some of them, I don't know how much you can put down to the weather and how much are just symptomatic of, A, some brilliant tennis from some pretty unsung players and some below-par tennis from others. I mean, the Wimbledon champion lost today, Garbiñe Muguruza, straight sets to Shea Souway. And for me, I didn't feel that surprised.
No, nor did I. I mean, she is, on her day, Shea Souway, she is anybody's worst nightmare, isn't she? She plays such a smart game. She just doesn't give you anything. And it's the ideal game for a day like today when you just want to stop faffing around. You know, the top names could probably be guilty of walking onto the court and thinking, this is about getting the job done as quickly as possible, rather than this is just about getting the job done. You're not getting the job done quickly any which way against Su Wei Shea. She's going to make your life difficult. She beat Jo Konta around one of the French. She's got, you know, a fair few scalps to her name. And it wasn't even that close against Muguruza today. There weren't that many moments where you thought, this is the comeback from the two-time Grand Slam champion, were there?
She looked out of sorts.
But a colleague of mine from Spanish Eurosport, Antonio, spoke to her in Spanish after the match, and sometimes you get a bit more from her in Spanish, I'm led to understand. And he said what she said was completely contradictory. The first question was how she is physically and whether that had any impact on the match today. And she said, absolutely not, it wasn't about that. And then in the last question, he said, you know, what's next for you? What's about the future? And she said, well, my body's a mess and I've got to get my body straight before I think about anything else. So it's difficult to know what today was down to other than an excellent performance by Su Wei Shea, or Shea Su Wei.
Yeah, I would say so. Johanna Konta, from a British perspective, we were watching her. You had her on Eurosport. We were commentating on her match, and I was really impressed with her opponent, Bernarda Pera, who is somebody I'd frankly never heard of, hardly. 123 in the world. She'd never done anything of any great note, but a left-hander, and she was slashing winners all over the place. And it got to 4-4, and you could just see the anxiety levels just starting to rise in Konta, and she was getting a little more flustered, and she just could not penetrate the court. You know, this is somebody who relies on power, and she was not able to really hurt her opponent at all.
I found a very weird performance from Jo Konta today, and that's not because Bernarda Pera did not play well. I don't think she played. There was nothing sort of lights out or purple patch about it. But I
disagree with you.
But it was very, very good. But I think Jo Konta made her life easy today. There was no plan B for Jo Konta.
She
walked out there.
Charge.
It was very, very clear that plan A was not working for whatever reason. You know, the stats about her serve being well below par, 9 kilometres per hour on average, slower than in her previous match here this week against Madison Brengel. She fell over a couple of times. She was out of sorts, she didn't have a plan B to resort to, and she was reluctant to. She, a couple of times she made forays into the net, but then she looked all at sea once she got there, completely kind of panicky about getting to the net and what to do there. No conviction at all. So look, it was a great performance from Bernarda Pera, but I think by the end of the first set, she sort of knew. She knew exactly what she was going to get. She knew she wasn't asked the difficult questions today, and I don't really know what to make of that from Jo Konta. As much as she's definitely opening up to us, I think in defeat, she's still not letting on very much.
I don't think she knows. She was asked there today, kind of, why was your serve slow? What happened? I don't think she had any answers for us, because I don't think she knows.
Well, is that a worry?
Yeah, I'd say it is. But I think it's, what, 3 wins in 11 matches, something like that? She acknowledged what she did do is she acknowledged the problem is you can't replicate match conditions anywhere else. And the problem is when you're losing matches, you don't get many matches. So she can't practice. And she needs to just be able to get beyond this set of results and this feeling of lack of control that she's got on court at the moment. She's not in control of enough matches the way she was. So I think it's just a question of doing the right things and plugging away, and it should come. I don't think there's much you can change, really, with her game, other than just to try to get back to where she was.
Yeah, as if there's the, I worry for her though. There's going to be a little bit of a feeling of running in quicksand because this is the portion of the year where she has a lot to defend, you know, and she's going to find herself slipping quite quickly. Now, if ranking isn't a big deal to her, that's okay, and maybe she will enjoy slipping down a bit and having a little bit less pressure on her shoulders. You know, constantly being reminded that you're a top 10 player, you're playing a lucky loser. You know, you've got everything to lose, and she's got nothing to lose. Maybe that will. Will help things along a bit. I don't know, but there are minor alarm bells. But let's give it some time. I think let's give it some time. It's still early days with Michael Joyce. She speaks very positively, so let's give it the benefit of the doubt and hope for the best here on the Tennis Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking. And I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. So as we continue into the evening session here, at the moment it looks like, I don't know whether you'd even call it an upset, the fact that Stan Wawrinka is, as we talk, losing 6-2, 3-love to Tennys Sandgren of the United States.
It's call a spade a spade, David. Tennis. His name's Tennis.
Imagine if you got the name Tennis and you worked in tennis. Pretty cool.
So I get the feeling somehow it's not accidental or coincidental.
Really?
I don't know. I think if you're... It's like Martina Hingis being named after Martina Navratilova, isn't it? Oh. I think there's a certain pressure to go into a certain profession.
Can I be named after West Bromwich Albion? Forget that.
Hawthorne's Law.
Not great seeing Stan losing by this sort of scoreline, is it?
There have been quite a few sort of unedifying sights today, haven't there? And this is definitely one of them. It's not, yeah, I mean... Very well done him. He's out there doing his job. I'm not saying he's a merciless Wawrinka killer, but yeah, it's difficult to derive any pleasure at all, really, from seeing a very definitely subpar Stan Wawrinka. The only positive to be taken is that he did win a match, yeah, which is probably more than he expected. So
may well be. Yeah. So somebody else who struggled today, David Goffin, out.
Oh, 7-6. Little David Goffin.
You sent me a picture of David Goffin with...
It is the loveliest picture. Actually, no, it's the second loveliest picture. At the time, it was the loveliest picture until I found a picture of Sasha Zverev with a wombat. So he's sort of tickling its tummy. And right. It is a joy to behold.
Okay, so what's the Goffin one?
He is sort of nose to nose... with it's called an Eskimo kiss, that, isn't it, when you nuzzle noses with somebody. He's nose to nose with a little koala, right. And he really looks like he's found a level. It looks like a meeting of minds,
kindred spirit. But
I'd just like to say, as much as it's an upset and, you know, you feel for David Goffin, because we all like him, he's lovely to watch as well. What a great story. The guy who beat him, Julien Beneteau, who I think is in his final year, isn't
he? I thought he'd retired at the end of last year. I thought that was the whole deal about when he had the run at the Paris Masters indoors. Oh, yeah. I thought that was... You know, because it was going to be his last year.
Maybe
and that was his last
so
chance.
Peeved about that Davis Cup
so
final.
I feel a little bit shortchanged.
Hold on, he's just beaten David Goffin.
I know, obviously he's justified still being on the tour, but I do feel a bit like I've already mourned the loss of Julien Beneteau from the world of tennis.
Okay,
and he's risen again.
You've got a second chance. Yeah. Fantastic. So there's an upset. What else happened today? We've seen, I tell you, if you want to know how to deal with heat problems, do what Madison Keys did today. She won 6-love 6-1 in 41 minutes, the first set being 16 minutes long.
Just absolutely leather the ball and hope it goes in.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the tactic I'd go with. But Alexandrova, her opponent, is someone that has the same attitude,
yeah,
no matter what the weather.
If that goes wrong, you're in trouble.
I think I can tell the story of that match just from the scoreline.
I'll tell you what. Credit to Dominic Thiem, came back from 2 sets to 0 down in the worst of the heat to win in 5. He out basically just wore down Dennis Kudla, the qualifier, didn't he? Angelique Kerber today continues. I mean, what
she
form
was
is
great.
She in?
Yeah, she's in great form. I think I've got her at least reaching the semi-finals, maybe even the... I think she could win this, I really do.
Kerber against Sharapova next, isn't it?
I think, well, the fact that I'm saying I think she could win this, I think Kerber's coming through that, but it's going to be a heck of a match.
Talking of Kerber, my favourite announcement of the day went out in the press today. Press announcement, Angelique Kerber's birthday cake has been donated to the press, and it is currently waiting for you in the kitchen.
Angelique Kerber has rejected her birthday cake. I've got a better announcement than that of the day, media.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, it's a sequence of two.
Oh, go on then.
So Sam Querrey, who lost today in four sets to...
Yes, he did lose today.
While you look that up, I'll tell the story.
It was against Fucsovics.
Fucsovics,
yes, from
Hungary. The Hungarian. So an announcement goes
out. Yourself in trouble.
Shortly, yes. Chris Bradnam loves to read that name out phonetically. It's for everyone's amusement. An announcement goes out shortly after Querrey's defeat. If anybody would like to speak to Sam Querrey, please report to the interview desk. Approximately 3.5 minutes later, media announcement, there will be no press conference with Sam Querrey.
Poor old Sam.
I laughed out loud.
He's probably delighted. But anyway, Simona Halep won through today, 6-2, 6-2 against Eugenie Bouchard. To me, she looked like she was moving as well as ever.
She did. There were rumours before the match that the ankle was not good at all. So well, I found that a very interesting performance.
And she said herself that I have an injury and I was feeling pain, but I just was trying not to think about it. And certainly it didn't look bad when she was out there. Alex van der Zverev has just won through 6-3 in the fourth. So he threw. Ash Barty carries on. She lost the first set today against Camilla Giorgi, but she's just won 6-1 in the third. So Roger Federer is about to come out onto the court. I've got to go and commentate on that.
Have you? With Mark Woodford, who I had a chat with earlier. Yeah.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, we did a preview of Kyrgios Songa.
Oh, yeah.
I've done a preview with Mark Woodford, Australian box ticked, Henri Leconte, French box ticked, and Mats Wilander, just excellent box ticked.
Oh, okay. Just general excellence. And David
Moore.
Well, less said about that. Just one final note as well. I also did a little feature today on BBC 5 Live that will be going out tomorrow in the official player barbers, where they cut the player's hair and so forth. I walked in on Leon Smith having his done. And I asked her, and the barber turned out to be...
In preparation for a future appearance on Eurosport, I'm sure.
Yes, the barber turned out to be from Manchester and has been here 10 years. And it
must be a weird accent.
He cut Roger Federer's hair last year, and he reckons that he was partially responsible for his run to the title with his new aerodynamic
but was
locks.
Disappointed, you say, not to be mentioned in his victory
he was
speech.
Devastated.
Do you know what, you do pick up really interesting nuggets from those barbers and the little corners that they have, the little facilities available in the players' lounge. I remember at Wimbledon one year I did a feature with a barber, and he said that Novak Djokovic came for a trim every other day, 1 millimetre off every other day.
Blimey.
That is how meticulous the man is.
How cool is that?
I loved that. Now, it tells you a lot about the person, doesn't it?
I like
meticulousness.
That. Meticulous, yeah. Right, I've got to go, Catherine. So this has been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with Eurosport, where you can watch all the tennis on Eurosport 1 and 2 and on Eurosport Player. With The Telegraph, read all the Simon Briggs' stuff. We are backed, of course, by Melanie Bowes, our executive producer, by tennisballs.com, by Triple S. How cool is that for a name? And, of course, we are sponsored by the Manga Club, where Catherine learns her forehand.
No, learned her improved forehand.
Will be met with fire by Jill Krabas, who's my new coach.
We need to agree official wording for this forehand business.
Well, I'll tell you, the rematch is coming. We'll be back with another Tennis Podcast tomorrow. See you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.